Governor, welcome to our committee. I want to start by thanking you for the good work that you did on disaster relief. I know in Eastern North Carolina in particular, I know you were there many, many days in many communities and talked to many, many people about the issues that they were facing. And I just can't thank you enough for the hard work that you put in that effort, because I think you got to see firsthand, you know, what a lot of these communities were dealing with, and it took a lot of effort on your part to get out and meet these people and understand the issues that you were having to deal with. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to you for some remarks. That'll be fine. Yes.
As soon as the storm, Hurricane Matthew, unexpectedly hit North Carolina, my team and many of you immediately went out to your districts and saw firsthand the devastation to our infrastructure, to towns, and more than anything else, to human beings. And in visiting the shelters, even the day after the hurricane hit Fayetteville and Lumberton and then proceeded over across the east, along every one of our major river basins, we all heard story after story after story of human loss, of human strength, of human heroes, and we all saw the best of North Carolina. I'll never forget these stories for the rest of my life. I'll never forget, outside of Lumberton, visiting one shelter where a woman came up to me and said, "Governor," as she was hugging me and embracing me, "Governor, I've got an addiction problem and I'm in recovery. I've lost everything. And I've even lost my dogs. I've lost my home. I've lost everything I own. And I've lost my dogs, and my dogs was what keeping me clean." And she just hugged me, "Can you find my dog?" And we immediately set her up with a local official, went out to the shelter, and we found the dog. And she said, "Don't forget." There were stories after stories after stories. In Princeville, I'll never forget the story of a hero of mine by the name of James Powell. Princeville, which is the first city founded by African Americans after the Civil War, which was completely devastated. You didn't have to, you had to be there to believe it, because you had to see it, you had to experience it, you had to, frankly, deal with the stench of the dirty water and the mildew and the pollution that had taken over Princeville. Unless you experienced all the feelings, you really had no idea what these people were going through. But the police, the fire chief there, saw a woman drowning in her car 50 yards out in the filthiest of dirtiest of water. And his volunteer officials were telling me the story of how the fire chief had a rope tied around his chest. And he went out 50 yards into the water, climbed up onto the cab, was pulling the woman out of the window, and all of a sudden, they both went down. While his volunteer firefighters are holding the rope and it's going down with him, he was underwater over a minute and a half on the main street of Princeville. They tied the rope to the bumper of the truck, put it in reverse fast as they can. It bent the bumper, pulling him out. They pulled him out. He was still breathing. And when he awoke, he did not remember a thing about being underwater for over a minute and a half. Not a thing. His other two members of his team went out and found the woman and rescued her. These were the heroic stories that we saw from the National Guard, volunteer police officers, police, our highway patrol, that I could repeat story after story after story. Agriculture people getting rowboats going across to save their animals, to save their livestock with hay because they had lost everything. In Goldsboro, a casket floating away that had come out of the ground, and city employees in Goldsboro recovering this casket. And I happened to be driving by when they did, and I said, you know, I got to get out of the car and thank them. I got out of my car. It was the biggest mistake I ever made. You do not want to be near a casket that's come out of the ground. But it was heart-wrenching that this hurricane did not even spare the dead. And sadly, this hurricane cost 28 lives, 26 of them by drowning in their cars. We've got roads totally destroyed. We've got livestock gone, chickens and poultry gone by the millions. And the sad news is we still have a lot of people without shelter. And we've got a lot of small businesses in many of your areas that were totally destroyed. And these were businesses that were barely staying alive anyway. So I told these individuals, along with my great team, that we would never forget them. Even when the weather got better and when the water receded, we wouldn't forget them. And I want to thank you for not forgetting them and for coming back into this special session. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you coming in during the Christmas holiday when you've got a lot of other things to do. You're coming back in because you're showing the people of North Carolina that were impacted by this hurricane that you have not forgotten them and you're going to do everything you can help them because they didn't ask for this. They were woke up in Lumberton in the middle of the night with no warning whatsoever. When a dam, the water went around it, no warning whatsoever. And one family, by the way, lost five of their dogs in the house, had to leave them. And they lost their car. They lost everything. And story after story after story. From Princeville to Tarboro to Lumberton to St. Paul to Fayetteville to Greenville to Goldsboro to Fairbluff to Kinston to Windsor to Bergdahl to Clinton. These stories are repeated and repeated and repeated. And we still have today at least five towns or at least five neighborhoods within towns that are totally gone, especially Fairbluff, parts of Lumberton, parts of neighborhoods in Fayetteville, totally gone. And we've got to come up with a plan to help these people and also to decide what to do with these towns. And we've got to do it now with a sense of urgency, because the longer you wait, two things are going to happen. First of all, mildew sticks around for a long time. It is the most dangerous thing I've ever been involved in. Thomas Stiff and I, my chief of staff, and I went into the school in Princeville, the elementary school, right after the water receded. It was a week or two later, and you could barely breathe. It was that bad. This mildew is deadly. God knows what was in that school, what was in that water. It wasn't good. We've got farmers that lost their entire crops. Peanut, cotton, soybeans. We've got people who rented houses, who lived in rental homes where FEMA can't help them. FEMA primarily helps homeowners. Well, a lot of poor people don't own their homes. And sadly, this hurricane hit the people who could least afford it. They could least afford it. It's like it aimed for the people who could least afford it. Sadly, the poorest of the poor live on the land that typically is in floodplains. And we see this in city after city after city that was impacted by this flood. I want to thank y'all for coming back into session, because there are people still hurting right now as we speak. There are people sitting in hotels throughout North Carolina and even in South Carolina that had to be moved to South Carolina, the Myrtle Beach area, because we didn't have hotels in certain towns that got hit. There were no hotels. There is no rental housing. In Kinston, the hotels got flooded. I mean, the mattresses were out. When the water receded, they had to clear out those hotels. And they need those hotels for businesses, too. So towns like Kinskin can be revived. But I want to thank you all for coming back, and I also want to thank some special people that are here. I think they're here. I haven't had a chance to see them, but I first want to thank Thomas Stiff, my chief of staff, who from the day this happened, I said, you're going to head this thing up. And Thomas's family grew up in the East, so he knows the East very well. I want to thank Ann Faircloth, who's a part of our recovery committee, Steve Wordsworth from Rocky Mount, Vanessa Harris from AT&T, Mike Sprayberry, who is a hero for me. Sprayberry, you give him an order, he just says, Roger that, Governor. And all I did was take his advice. And thank God Mike Sprayberry and his emergency management team decided to keep all the, when the storm was supposed to go out the Atlantic Ocean, I said, what do you think we all do? Should we move all our stuff down to South Point? He said, you know what? These things are unpredictable. Let's keep it where we have it, scattered throughout the East, and be ready to move at a moment's notice. It was the best recommendation I ever got. So before we go any further, I don't know if they're here today, but y'all need to give Mike Sprayberry and these people, because they have not slept since that storm, along with many of the victims. If y'all could give them a round of applause, I'd appreciate it. There's another reason you're here, because of all things, right after the flood started receding, of all things, we got California wildfires that came out west. From Chimney Rock to Lake Lore to Franklin to Batcave to Hayesville to Marion to Blowing Rock, I got to see firsthand the firefighters and the first responders, and also some people that were helping us in Lumberton went up to the Hayesville area and the Franklin area helping there too. I said, didn't I just see you in Lumberton? He said, yes, sir. They had not slept in weeks. And these firefighters and first responders and volunteers were heroic. They did not sleep for 3 weeks fighting these wildfires in North Carolina. And not one life has been lost in North Carolina. And just think of what just recently happened in Tennessee. They were not getting any sleep whatsoever. And our county officials and their emergency response teams out west, like we saw down east, did an outstanding job. And but now it's our turn to help them get back on their feet and come back even stronger, both due to the wildfires in the west and total destruction in the east. We have towns like Fairbluff right now. Their total budget is $900,000 a year. Their total budget. They have a part-time mayor. Their downtown in Fairbluff, they have a building that's probably worth $100,000 to repair that building. It's going to cost $1 million. You know, what do you do? You'd have to gut the whole thing. They've got to reinvent themselves. And they do not have the expertise to do this. But they've got to move quick and make some decisions, because people's livelihood are at stake right now in towns like Fairbluff and Princeville and parts of many other towns. So we've got to do some things quickly. And the package that we put together includes housing, which is our number one priority. We've got to get people into permanent housing. FEMA has been great, by the way. We've got mobile homes to help them, but not enough. We don't have enough temporary housing. We don't have enough rental. We've got to get these people out of the hotels, because they're going to be, FEMA only pays for the hotels for a certain period of time. They're going to be kicked out. We cannot have those people go back out on the street during the Christmas holidays in cold weather. That is not the North Carolina way. That's why we have this emergency session right now. We have to help these individuals. So housing is our major goal. Rental assistance, construction of new rentals, repairs. And then some of them, we've got to just tear them down. And those decisions have to be made very, very quickly. And some of these towns do not have the expertise to make those decisions. And we need to provide them that expertise. Local governments, I ask you to clear up the school calendar flexibility as quick as possible. We've got superintendents and students and parents going, what do we do? I mean, a lot of days were lost. And I did not want them to have to make up those days during the Christmas holiday. That wouldn't have been fair for these individuals. And I hope you give some serious flexibility to people who have had to deal with the biggest natural disaster that's ever hit North Carolina. Let's don't act bureaucratic. Let's use some common sense. Local governments also need help with infrastructure. We still have a lot of road repair. We still have trash pickup is a major issue. If you go to some of these towns, we still have major debris and trash pickup needs. And can you imagine how long that trash has been sitting there? We've got issues about whose trash it is. Who cares? It's trash. Let's deal with it. We've got river maintenance that needs. One of the biggest issues, Whiteville. Most people don't realize Whiteville was totally flooded. Downtown Whiteville, beautiful, beautiful town. And they think one of the major reasons it was flooded was because of beaver dams. We also saw this in Windsor. They were actually flooded 2 weeks before the flood. They've been flooded twice now. But some very poor neighborhoods outside of Windsor were also hit, in addition to downtown. And the beaver dam issue, which apparently we changed the beaver dam policy 15, 20 years ago in North Carolina. Well, they know how to build dams, like dams this high. And when it floods, all that water is held back, and then it just flows into these towns and cities. So we've got to deal with the beaver issue and have a clear policy through wildlife and what to do with it. Because if it continues, we're going to continue to see these flooding patterns that our state has never seen before. Economic development stabilization, we want to help some of these small businesses, especially these businesses on Main Street, these businesses on Crossroad, which were totally wrecked and closed. And we said, well, we can give you a loan, FEMA and others. Well, we'll give you a loan, and some of the people would go, a loan? How do you expect me to pay back that loan? Look at the revenue I've lost. Look at the debt I'm already under. Is there anything else you can help us with? And these are types of grants that we would like to recommend to these small businesses. Because remember, every one of these small businesses, they have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 employees. And the longer they stay out of work, the longer our economy hurts and those towns hurt. And then last is planning, where we need to provide some expertise so these people are making the best long-term decision for their town. And you've got to recognize in areas like Fairbluff and Princeville and other areas, these are emotional decisions. This is their town. And yet we've got to clearly explain the options that are available. If you rebuild here, what happens when the next flood comes? And if you do rebuild, are we going to rebuild the right way so a future governor or a future legislature is not going to have to deal with this issue again? But we've got to make these decisions right now, because the longer you wait, some people are already starting to rebuild with their own money, with other funds, and we may be repeating the same mistakes that were made after Hurricane Floyd. That's why there's a sense of urgency with regard to this too. Because if you have piecemeal planning going on throughout this state, we're going to have piecemeal results, which are not beneficial to a long-term, sustainable, resilient community. And we need to think about that. And that's how some of our funding plans are being presented to you. So, again, the agricultural community also is being impacted a great deal, and I hope you consider that to be a part of your plan. I especially want to thank, again, our National Guard, the Salvation Army, the Baptist Men, the Red Cross. They continue to do great work in these communities as we speak today. And during these holidays, before the holiday season actually comes, let's give these people something to grasp onto, that they have a future. Because right now, they're going through stages of grief. They've lost loved ones. They've lost everything they had. They're in shock. They're now waking up to reality of going, what is my future? I've lost everything. Let's give these people a chance to get back on their feet and again be a productive part of North Carolina. And that is the best of North Carolina. You are the best of North Carolina, and I'm proud of you. Thank you, and God bless each one of you.
Thank you all very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Governor. I know those of us that represent some of those areas understand exactly what you're talking about, and they're tough issues. And, you know, what we're doing today is, I'll call it a down payment, because I think we all realize that we're going to have to come back and revisit this, you know, as we get into session next year and just see what, how it plays out and what we need to do later. So this is kind of the down payment, I guess you can say, to help some of these people. Before we discuss the bill, you should have a copy of the rules, and I'll go over the rules real quick. Amendments cannot increase total spending appropriated for a stated purpose beyond the total authorized for that purpose in the bill. Amendments can only affect the administration of funds by a department for that purpose. Amendments cannot increase total spending from any source, and amendments must pertain to disaster relief. Amendments cannot change substantive policy or law. And with that, Senator Jackson, you're going to go over the bill.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And speaking of amendments, I have one they're passing out. Unless I'd like to go ahead and get that done if we could first thing. And we have a little change to what you're seeing as you're reading it there. We're going to strike the last several words. If you look at B, do all of you have the amendment? Okay.
Let's get the amendment out if we could. Yeah.
We realized this morning we had put money to different places and we had allocated different agencies to do different things, but we had forgot one important part of that, and it was brought to our attention this morning, and in conversing with the House, we felt like this was just the right thing to do. We left out the private septic tank owners, and where this where this storms have hit, that's predominantly what is there. So this amendment basically is instructing the money going to DEQ for DEQ to work with the Department of Health and Human Services to help to assist the local health departments in their issues with their septic tanks. And now does everyone have the amendment? And B is actually the only thing we're changing, and we are deleting in the wake of Hurricane Matthew, so that way it will be consistent with the bill as it is listed throughout the rest of the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Stanley, is that about correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right, everyone has the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? All right, I need a motion. Senator Hyde.
Just a technical question. The portion B that I have on the amendment says flooding in the wake of Hurricane Matthew, and I think you said we were deleting that.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hyde, we are deleting just caused by flooding, period. And then we'll delete in the wake of Hurricane Matthew. In the wake of Hurricane Matthew will not be in it once it's engrossed.
Does everybody understand what we're doing with the amendment? Senator Rabin?
Thank you. Just for clarity, and that clears up the fact that the other two tropical storms would therefore be included, and that is the purpose.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
I just thought that the committee would probably need to know that clarity, but thank you.
Good point, Senator Rabin. Thank you.
Right, in the bill, there's two tropical storms that are mentioned, and by having this language, it would eliminate those, and it's part of what we need to take care of. All right, looks like I got a motion by Senator Tillman and a second by Senator Tucker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the amendment passes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members, for correcting this problem. I'm going to just briefly go through the bill, and then I'll ask Mr. Stanley to go through it in more in-depth, but I'll just highlight some of the key points of it. Part one, of course, is just the title. Part two is the legislative findings of how devastating these storms were to North Carolina as long as the wildfires. I'd also like to thank, the governor has thanked everyone that has been involved in the storms and the flooding, and I would like to echo those sentiments, as well as thank our North Carolina Forestry Service for the great work they've done in the mountains of our state as well. There were 34 school systems closed, $967 million in damage to homes, with $659 million not covered by FEMA, and that is what we're attempting to do here today, members, is try and bridge the gap. And as Chairman Brown has already stated, this is just sort of a down payment, or phase one, as I like to say, of what I hope will be at least a two-phase some solution to this issue we have going on. Part three, it covers the counties that are currently covered, and that's going to be around 87 counties in our state from either the two tropical storms, the hurricane, and the wildfires. It's going to encompass around 87 counties within our state. because the House amended the bill as we got it to add Wilkes and Ashe County, which added a couple of more counties that was in the problem with the fires. Part four is the funding of the disaster relief. The total appropriations in this particular bill is $200,928,370. $100,928,370 is coming out of our savings reserve account, which is our rainy day fund, which is what it's there for. And $100 million out of the unappropriated general fund balance that was left on the bottom line from this past year's budget. $20 million, as the governor spoke about, is housing is a big issue, and so $20 million of this is going to the housing trust fund to help folks that have no insurance. Typically, this program will cover folks at 80% of the medium income level, but this bill for this particular program will give them 100% coverage, which makes them whole. We didn't want to try and put any more burden on them than the storms have already had. $9 million will be going to emergency management to meet the short-term housing needs. As the governor mentioned earlier as well, there is still a lot of folks, to our knowledge, there's around 1,600 folks still living in hotel rooms. And that is costing currently $1.1 million a week. And those funds will actually stop come January the 7th. So this is truly a critical need right here, this $9 million, which this whole bill is critical need money and trying to meet the solutions for the critical needs. But this $9 million is certainly one that we need to put in there immediately. The $11.5 million is going to emergency management for resilient redeveloping planning. This money will be used to train the local governments in how to apply for grants and how to administer them once they have been approved. $66 million thereabouts is going to be given towards the State Emergency Response and Disaster Fund, and this is basically a state match. This number will continually go up, but we knew we needed money in there to match the feds when their money comes in. As we already know, $334 million is forthcoming in the last CR that was done in D.C. this week, so this money will be used for that, and there'll be more money needed as we go forward. $10 million is going to the State Emergency Disaster Response and Disaster Fund as contingency. This is really just refilling the money in the disaster program that the governor has to make quick needs, whereas this has been depleted. We're just replenishing it. We've got $5 million going to the Golden Leaf to give as grants to entities. They will be nonprofits, and those entities will loan out money to the businesses, to small businesses, at zero interest. So there will be no interest collected on these loans. $20 million is also going to the Golden Leaf to provide grants to local governments to meet infrastructure needs. $10 million is going to the Department of Commerce's Rural Economic Division to be given as well as the grants to meet infrastructure needs. $10 million is going to DEQ and the this amendment we just done is where that money will be coming from for the septic tanks is in DEQ, but it also be used for dam safety, emergency permits, and the caskets that you heard the governor speak of earlier. $37.95 million is going to the Department of Ag, with approximately $24 million of that going for the wildfires in the west and timber reforestation. $1.2 million is going to AgRap to help with the erosion part of it that is in the pond dams and that were breached during the storm. $10 million is going for the stream debris removal, and as we heard the governor speak as well. We've got $1 million going to the Department of Insurance to provide grants to assist volunteer fire departments with damage that they received that aren't covered by FEMA. And we have $250,000 going to the Department of Commerce to work with Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina to actually assess the needs for businesses in our state and how we may further assist them, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're just making a shot in the dark, if you want to be honest about it. But we are trying to at least get some critical needs met immediately, and as we move forward into next year and more of these needs arise, we'll be back in session to address it again. And then basically this is mostly technical on the rest of it. And at this point, I'll ask Mr. Stanley if he wants to go through in detail. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Ben.
Thank you, Senator Jackson and Mr. Chairman. Senator Jackson walked you through most of the money decisions and the first sections of the bill dealing with the title and the findings, so I'm not going to go over those unless you all ask me to. So what I will do is you should have a bill in summary in front of you, and I'm going to start actually with section 4.2, which is the section of the bill in summary that begins right after the money allocations. Section 4.2 provides that because the General Assembly will convene shortly after the bill is enacted and has continuing authority to address the state's disaster relief needs, it finds that broad executive expenditure flexibility over the funds in question is not warranted, and so it notwithstands two governor's budget authority sections so that they do not apply to the funds appropriated in this act. It does not do anything to those statutes with respect to other funds. Section 4.3 requires that savings be affected where possible. Section 4.4 prevents funds appropriated in the act from reverting until the General Assembly directs that they do so. Section 5.1 grants the governor the authority to establish time-limited positions to implement the act. Section 5.2 requires the governor to establish advisory councils to advise state agencies on implementing the act. Section 5.3 provides that if a person's home is relocated or purchased with funds from the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program or the State Acquisition and Relocation Fund, the State Emergency Response and Disaster Relief Fund is subrogated to the person's rights under Indian insurance coverage. So essentially, if a person has their house relocated under either of those programs, then collects an insurance payout, they have to return to the state the amount they received from the state. Section 5.4 encourages state agencies to acquire goods and services from historically underutilized business vendors. Section 5.5 states that the General Assembly intends to review the adequacy of federal funding at a future date. Section 5.6 prohibits state funds appropriated in the act from being used to construct new residences within the 100-year floodplain unless the construction is in an area regulated by a unit of local government pursuant to a floodplain management ordinance and the construction complies with that ordinance. And based on some discussion that occurred in the House Appropriations Committee yesterday, apparently most local governments have such ordinances. Section 5.7 provides that a local board of education that closed a school during the month of October 2016 due to extraordinary weather conditions related to Hurricane Matthew for at least two consecutive school days shall be deemed to have completed any scheduled instructional hours and days in excess of those 2 days. Section 5.8 requires the Office of State Budget and Management to report on a monthly basis to the chairs of the Appropriations Committee and to the Fiscal Research Division. It also requires non-state entities that receive or administer funds under the Act to cooperate in helping the Office of State Budget and Management meet that reporting obligation. Section 5.9 grants the governor the authority to waive certain DMV fees for residents of areas affected by Hurricane Matthew. Section 5.10 requires the governor to ensure that funds appropriated in the act are expended in a manner that doesn't adversely affect any person or entity's eligibility for federal funds. It also requires the governor, to the extent practicable, to avoid using state funds to cover costs that will or likely will be covered by federal funds at a later date. Section 5.11 requires the Department of Commerce to transfer any CDBG disaster recovery funds to the Division of Emergency Management. And the final section is the effective date, Section 6.1, which provides that except as otherwise provided, the act is effective when it becomes law.
Thank you, Ben. All right, questions for Senator Jackson or Mr. Stanley? Senator Davis.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chair, and to the entire team here that's, you know, worked on this package. You know, I appreciate, you know, the work that's gone into this. My question I want to start out today is inquiring specifically about the short-term housing. As the governor eloquently articulated, there's still tremendous concern and need in this area. There's still residents who are hotels, still trying to figure out how they're going to get through the holidays and what's going to be next for them. When I look and I'm factoring through the numbers here, with over 1,600 still in hotels, You're talking at a burn rate about $1.1 million a week. We're talking about 8 weeks or so with this appropriation. Do we foresee having people out of short-term housing in about an eight-week window?
Mr. Chairman, if I may
Senator
answer
Jack?
That.
Yeah.
Senator Davis, that's a valid point. We're hoping that FEMA will extend theirs, but if not, this will give us actually another 2 months at the burn rate you're referring to. And so we'll be back in session and can address that immediately at that point in time if FEMA has not stepped up and assisted with this. But we're hoping to be able to get some of these folks into sort of temporary housing besides hotels and motels. And so, you know, we're thinking manufactured homes and that type of thing is what we're hoping to be able to do, whereas FEMA will assist with some of that, and this will just sort of be a bridge to we can get it completed.
Follow up. Stepping back to a broader perspective, and again, I've heard the words and acknowledgement. Obviously, this is a first step.
Right.
Do we have any indication right now what the gap may be, realizing we're still actually getting figures in, believe it or not? Do we have an idea what the true unmet need is at this point?
Senator Jackson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Davis, to be honest with you, I don't think any of us really knows what the unmet needs are, and that's why we're doing this now, to at least have this money available until we can get back in session. I think it will be March or April probably before we actually have true needs when it comes to the flooding victims. Now, in the mountains, the the Forestry Department is pretty certain on what the needs are there. They know the invoices that are coming in, but as far as in the flooding areas, there's still a lot of information being collected, and so this is just a temporary to at least have money available to meet those needs before we get back into session.
Okay. And Senator Davis, this is, like we said earlier, is a bridge just to get us until we can better understand what the needs really are. But follow up.
And just a final follow up, and don't get me wrong.
I
acknowledge to you, I realize this is a first step, and hopefully not only are we moving towards helping residents here during their time of need, but we're also planting the seed today as well. But my final question here is based on the a little over 200 million, do we know, based on the current needs, unmet needs, do we know proportionally, how that mounts up relatively to Floyd?
I don't know that I can answer that question.
I'm not sure I can either, really. We can maybe try to get you that information.
Yeah, we can try and get you that information. But from what we're understanding, you know, if you take the value of the dollar then and the value of the dollar now, I would think this storm is going to be as dramatic as Floyd, if not more so.
Senator Blue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of quick questions. First, Senator Jackson, and I think it's subparagraph 6 on page 4, you allocate $5 million to the Golden Leaf Foundation to make direct grants. Was any thought given, and I think this is a great idea, was any thought given to authorizing Golden Leaf in turn to sort of sub-grant to some of these on-the-ground organizations that really know these areas better than Golden Leaf and know the needs? For example, some of the CDCs that have operated in these areas over the years, or entities like Self-Help Credit Union, the entities that have really operated in some of the rural or smaller areas in the state, who probably have a database already of some of these businesses that are under tremendous pressure, and could cut short the process that Golden Leaf making direct grants would have to pursue, and go ahead and get this money to these businesses that are trying to recover because they know about them and know of their ability to repay. That was my first question. Was any thought given to that kind of sub-granting capability?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Blue, absolutely. And that's the reason we put $5 million in there. We originally had more money there, but Golden Leaf came back to us and said they had already allocated $2 million to this particular program, to the nonprofits that you're referring to, some of the ones you're referring to. And so they had only used just a small percentage of that $2 million, so we thought this $5 million would be more than sufficient to March or April of this coming year. And so, but that was the thought process, was to get it to Golden Leaf, because they have the expertise to get it to these other groups that can get it right to the ground immediately. And so that was the thought process there, absolutely.
And, Sir Blue, we've had a lot of conversation with Mr. Gerlach about this.
Great.
Go ahead.
The other question that I had with respect to the schools, I know that in Robinson, and I've visited most of these areas all over the state, but I know in Robinson County the schools were closed for 3 weeks.
Yes, sir.
Was any thought given to sort of sending a signal to the administrators that not only can they forgive this time that's missed, but that we would be willing to do additional funding so that they could make up this time at some point, maybe not Christmas, but in the summer, because if these kids miss school 3 weeks, that's about 10% of the school year, not quite, but it's 15 days out of 180 days. And it's not just that they get 3 weeks behind kids from areas who haven't experienced this, but in most instances it puts them 3 or 4 months behind kids from some of the areas that aren't under the same kind of challenge that most of these districts are under. So is there any way to send a signal that not just that we will allow you to forgive this, but that we're willing to pay for an extra month or whatever it takes in these areas for those administrative units that are willing to take the heat to keep kids in school for an extra month for them to make up this missing time.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Blue, there was discussion of that. There is nothing implied in this language before us today, but that was a discussion that we were extremely concerned about with the students missing that instructional time. And we're hoping, because some LEAs are already making up those days. And so, you know, my hat's off to those superintendents that made that decision, because that was not an easy decision for them to make. But your points are well taken, and that was sort of our intentions, is that we hope everyone understands that the needs are still there to instruct our children so that they can meet the need, what has been already required of them at the end of the year.
And Senator Blue, Robinson County is a little bit unique because you're right. It's probably had more problems than anyone. When we get back in session, we may have to do something pretty quick to help the issue that you're talking about. We just don't truly understand it at this point, you know, what we need to do.
And last question, and again, this is sort of additive to what you've done, because, again, I think that this is a reasonable start. But was there any thought given to us as a legislative group of actually doing a task force so that our members could get to work before we come in here in late January, seriously. But a task force of all of the members from these affected areas so that we get different perspectives, but clearly able to have continuous dialogue with the local governmental entities, the local citizens, those who were directly impacted, so that they inform all of us. I mean, given the breadth of this bill, as you say, 87 counties are involved anyhow. But those that were most seriously impacted by these floods, and you could probably get several counties out west, and I've been out there too, that were most directly impacted by the wildfires, to sort of get ahead of this curve so that when the discussions continue rather earnestly, after we are in session, the members have a full command of what's happening. They have the ability to help assess what the needs are or to determine whether those needs that are being reported really do reflect what people are experiencing across the state. Was there any thought given to doing something like that?
Senator Jackson.
There was thought given to it. There's a lot of informal conversations about doing just that. But at this point in time, we figured that could be sort of assembled when we come back in January, because still, Senator Blue, we're really just getting the tip of the iceberg of numbers in. And, you know, and it helps. And I think most legislators have been in contact with their localities and know what's going on in their district and have been reporting that stuff back into the different agencies. But, you know, I think that's an excellent idea that we do it, but there is nothing formal in this bill setting that up.
There are some reporting requirements in the bill that will help us get some of that information as well.
Absolutely.
Senator Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Jackson. Just a couple of questions. In behalf of one of our colleagues who mentioned that in some of the areas, some of the residents are dealing with sewage in their homes that may have been not from septic tanks but from public sewer. So is there any provision in this bill? I see the septic tanks mentioned, and I'm very familiar with the problems caused by septic tanks. I used to live in an area that had those problems. But is there any provision in here where local governments may be saying it's not my problem, and that's what she indicated yesterday? Is there any provision here to assist with those kinds of problems?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Robinson, actually, number nine, the $10 million that's being allocated to DEQ, and that's within their purview and to be working on issues such as that.
Okay.
So it's that's in the, on page four, line 38.
Okay, I see. The follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
One other one. When we're one of the other issues, and I've tried to look to see if there's any provision in here, and maybe it is in general, but we know that the people who are homeless, who are in hotels, et cetera, have limited funds and also are dealing with needs in terms of daily food. And there are people in the area who are trying to set up food trucks or be out in the areas and feed people. We know that we do have Second Harvest and other kinds of food banks. Is there any provision in here for emergency feeding to assist organizations, whether Salvation Army, food banks, et cetera, in terms of the daily food needs of the people who are homeless or in shelters or hotels right now?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Robinson, I think I know the answer to that, and I think they're in, within some of the emergency management as well as FEMA, they're covering the daily food needs. And so, but I don't know that it's actually specifically spelled out, but I think they're all, that is already sort of in their wheelhouse of what they're doing is what we have been told.
Okay, just follow up, Mr. Chairman. Would you just make sure that people understand that that is available or clarify so that it is available to assist?
Okay. Sure.
Senator Davis, Jim Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Jackson, thanks to you and to your our colleagues who've worked on this. I know it's been a difficult project. I'd like to refer you to page 3, section 3.1. Not being an expert in legalese, it says basically, I understand this as the counties that are involved, that are eligible for this, have already been set, and yet I understand that you've added a couple of counties to that. Is this a dynamic process, and can we find out those counties?
I will refer to our attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So essentially, if you look at the language that you're talking about, Senator Davis, dealing with the declared a major disaster by the President of the United States, that is flexible enough so that if there are counties added to it, it would be covered by this act. If you look at the part dealing with the state declarations on lines 23 through 27, the reason that we didn't use similar general language here is because at one point the governor declared a state of emergency that covered all 100 counties. And so if we simply said part of an emergency area of a, you know, from a executive order in response to an emergency, all counties in the state would be covered. I think you're asking about, you said some counties were recently added. In House Appropriations yesterday, there was an amendment to add executive order number 16. That's the you'll see that on lines 26 through 27. And that was because that had been inadvertently left out. It wasn't because of late developments on the ground yesterday. It was just a drafting mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one more question, if I may,
okay,
please. On page 6 Section 5.3, again, not being an expert on legalese, I don't know if FEMA takes, you know, covers contents of people's homes. And so I was just wondering if FEMA pays for your home or you get some sort of mitigation on the cost of your home, can anybody claim people's benefits for the contents of their home to help pay for that? I didn't understand how this language read. Does that, you understand my question? Does my question make sense?
Mr. Chairman, I do, and I would like to ask Mark if he could answer that question. Mark.
All right, Mark.
Mark White, Fiscal Research Division. So FEMA covers a variety of provisions, and I'm sorry, Senator, is the question specifically about furniture?
No, it's my understanding is from the presentation is that we were trying to make sure that people couldn't double dip. They couldn't get money from any source to pay for their home and then get insurance benefits as well. And I was just wondering if government or any entity was going to reserve the right to claim money that they got for contents in addition to their home.
Mark White, Fiscal Research. I think that may be a question in terms of the how the insurance law applies for what's covered and what's not. FEMA typically covers structural issues with homes and doesn't usually – I'm not familiar if they're more on the furniture end or contents so much as they are on structural issues, windows, doors, plumbing, that sort of thing.
Senator Davis, that's not the intent of the bill, I can tell you. I think what they're trying to – I think what the intent is if FEMA pays for the home and then an insurance policy would pay for the home, you know, that would be double dipping, I guess. But, Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at line 20 on that page, Senator, you will see that the only insurance coverage that is covered by the section is coverage for damage to the home. Yeah. And so I think that would probably not apply to personal property of the sort that you're asking about. The other thing I would note is that similar language appeared in the wake of the 2004 storm, so it was in the 2005 bill. And so I would imagine that if you wanted to ask the department about how this operated in practice, they would have some information about that for you.
Senator Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Something on an issue. You know, some of these areas that are rebuilding, a lot of people just don't have flood insurance. And I know we have to have car insurance to drive on a road, so is there any type of requirement to have flood insurance in some of these areas that are, you know, we got 100-year floodplains, 50-year floodplains?
Good. Senator Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Brock, basically what it says, if it's within a 100-year floodplain and they can't rebuild in those areas, as unless the local government has a water management plan in place, and I understand a lot of them do, but that's sort of the requirement because it is hard to get flood insurance in a lot of these areas, and this storm is just another example of most folks not realizing that they didn't have flood insurance.
Okay. And actually, the main part of my question, when we're looking at the groups that will be passing money through, do we have a cap or a certain percentage for administrative and overhead costs? Like if we give Golden Leaf, what was it, $20 million, are they capped at a overhead cost or administrative, or is it a certain percentage?
Mr. Chairman, you want to answer that, Ben? But to my knowledge, we did not cap it in the language, but we did have that discussion, and it was sort of conveyed to these folks that, you know, 10% or less was exactly what we were expecting.
Also, Senator Brock, most of the agencies we try to give the money to already do some of this stuff. So it's not like they have to go reinvent the wheel, and I think that was important.
That was my follow-up. That was my point. I don't want them to start, you know, double-dipping, charging us for something they're doing already when we're trying to give money to help these people that they're not getting they're double-dipping on that money. Thank you.
And that was our intention, is to try and get it to folks that are already doing this type of thing, so there, as has already been stated, that we weren't reinventing the wheel.
Senator Bryant, we got a finance meeting here shortly, so we got to try to wrap this up if we can, Senator Bryant, soon. But go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Brown. But I want to say I had my hand up now from the beginning, from when you first started the meeting. I wanted to thank you all for the work you have done, but one of the things that is critical to me is in how in the floor recovery process, which is one I was involved in significantly, one of the most helpful parts of it was the housing counseling program. I think about $15 million was put into that program. And while I support all the areas that we have identified here for spending, we are not giving any kind of direct individual assistance for people. The governor mentioned giving people something to grasp onto, but what I'm seeing in my area is people are needing help navigating the maze of benefits available to them or not available and even identifying their gaps. We're going into the holidays and beyond without people having any individual assistance for their individual situation. Even taking a situation like Princeville, we could go further with helping to decide what might be good for the town, how if the individuals in the town each had a clear sense of what their own individual options are, which feed into some of these regional and planning options. And it is painful to me that we are going to go about 8 weeks without that. Now, Mr. Sprayberry said he's putting in for federal money, but it may be February before that comes in for a statewide RFP. What was helpful in Floyd is that we were able to have contracts with people in the community, professionals, people trusted. They are not going to take the advice of strangers on these kind of personal issues. And I'm concerned that some of this money in here could not be made flexible enough to give either emergency management or some other entity some authority for bridge funding for individual housing counseling so people haven't cast a lot for themselves, so much so that they're stuck by the time we get to them in February or March.
Senator Bryant, we were aware of that. And Senator Jackson, you want to touch on that?
I will. And that is the reason. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bryant, you brought up some very valid points, and we discussed that over and over again. And that is the reason we came up with, if you look on page 3, and I think I'm correct in this where this money's going to, and line 49, you know, it talks about $11.5 million going to the emergency management. That is so that they can get out there in the field immediately and train these local governments on how to assist their constituencies in those areas so that they can get the money on the ground the most quickest and most efficient way.
Okay, follow up. Again, this is money to the local government. This is not money for individuals to provide, for professionals to provide individual counseling to the members affected. And so you can do a planning, and like in our region, we are multiple victims of flooding. We already have professionals capable. You know, we went through Floyd and recovered. So we have people capable to deliver this service, but no funding for it is my only point. So I think the 11.5 is a great start. I would appeal to you to either look at adding to that so that local governments who are capable now of delivering bridge housing counseling can do that until the FEMA plan is in, a FEMA contract or something is in place, or looking at the $9 million to emergency management and adding to that or making that also more flexible, because that is the critical area. And since I'm limited in time, I want to mention one other thing. What we're finding in some of our areas is that people did what we asked them to do, and they bought flood insurance. But when they have a sewer backup, as Senator Robertson mentioned, their homeowner's insurance is saying it's flood water, so it's not covered. The flood insurance is saying it's sewer backup, it's not flood water, even though the flood water caused the sewer backup. So these folks are similarly caught in a gap that I just wanted to make you aware of. But that housing and counseling, it would be my top priority. I think we may an appeal to that on that through Senator Pate. If there's anything you can do for us on that in a temporary basis, I think it will make a big difference for the ultimate result you want.
Senator Bryan, I just got some numbers. The feds have given us $81 million for individual assistance, and it's covered 76,000 people at this point. So I know that's in place as well.
Okay, I just follow up. Yeah. That's individual assistance they get for their situation. That does not include advice about how to navigate the multiple programs available for their recovery. In addition to that, you got a social unrest problem, and this also leads to mental stress where you got a bunch of different programs, public and private. Some people in the know get access. You got the holidays coming up. Some people in the know will get more than enough stuff. You got other people who are not as sophisticated, maybe not as connected, not in the know, they will not get. So it creates all that kind of tension in the community and sets people back, as well as some of the mental health stresses. And it's not, however, it's not a mental health counseling issue. It's a life, you know, decision mm-hmm. counseling issue around what these benefits are available. And I can't keep up with, you know, and I'm a pretty smart person, I want to say, but I can't understand how some of these programs, I mean, smart mm-hmm. enough to understand this, but I don't get, you know, it's complicated. So.
Mark, can you touch on this? I think we've tried to address some of this issues.
I agree, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. We've tried to address this, Senator Bryant.
Sure. Mark White, Fiscal Research. Senator, FEMA, working in conjunction with emergency management, does have some roaming survivor assistance teams that are out on the field, and the indication we've had from them is that those efforts are ongoing and sort of expanding. The disaster recovery centers that FEMA has established are also local offices that folks can go to try to help them figure out how to apply for the aid that does exist.
I just want to say one thing. All the roaming, these are in-place people looking at the particular situations of the people in the respective communities who know the communities. That was what was critical in Floyd. I just want to.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Bryant. All right. I need a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tillman.
We've discussed this thoroughly. I think we have a great plan and great work, and I'm ready to make a motion that will pass the bill favorably.
All right. I have a motion. Do I have a second? Second, Senator Wade. Any more discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tucker.
Yeah, just one point I want to make. I want to thank you and the appropriations in both the House and the Senate for frugal and disciplined budgeting to build the safety rainy day fund up to the $1 billion that the number was, so that we didn't have to borrow money from the federal government in disaster relief and not use it to balance the budget like it had been done in the past, and that we have this money available to start to do the bridge that's necessary. And in phase two, there'll be additional dollars required of the state. And we have that cash on hand, the very reason we have a savings plan.
Thanks, Senator Tucker. All right, I have a motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we're adjourned, and Finance Committee will start in about 5 minutes.
Thank you.